So the original name, the name of the original book is Visuddhimagga, which means the path to purification or the way to purification or purity. Magga means the path, and Visuddhi means purification or purity. And this book was written in Pali language. Actually, Pali was not the name of the language. It was the name of a category of Pali literature, which are called texts. And the word Pali is used in contradistinction to the Atthagathas, or commentaries, and Tikas, sub-commentaries. But the language was also, the language also came to be known as Pali at a later date. So at our times, the word Pali means both the text and the language in which the texts are recorded. So the texts, which comprise of Vinaya, Sutta, and Abhidhamma, are called Pali. And the commentaries are called Atthagatha, and Tikas are called sub-commentaries. So this book belongs to the category of commentaries, the second category in Pali literature. So the first there were texts, and then commentaries, and then commentary on commentaries. So they are called sub-commentaries. And the author of this book was the Venerable Buddha Ghosa. Here it is given as Badhantacharya Buddha Ghosa. Actually, the name, his personal name was Buddha Ghosa. The word in front of that is Badhantacharya. Badhanta is like the venerable, and Acharya means teacher. So it means something like the revered teacher Buddha Ghosa. And Buddha Ghosa was his personal name. And Buddha means the Buddha, and Ghosa means the voice. So Buddha Ghosa means the voice of the Buddha. He wrote, or he compiled and edited many commentaries. It was not the only commentary he wrote. But it seems that this book was written first, and then the other commentaries followed later. But we do not know whether they were published one after the other, or more or less at the same time. The other commentaries always refer to Visuddhimagga when they have to say something in detail. So we can assume that this book was written first, and then the other commentaries came later. And although this is called a commentary, this book is not a commentary on a particular sutta or a particular collection of sutta or a particular pitaka. It is called a common commentary of the text. That means it quotes copiously from the text and then explain these texts in great detail. So it is not a commentary of any particular sutta or collection or pitaka, but it is a common commentary to all texts. And the author of this book was Buddha Ghosa, and he lived in the 5th century AD. So he was about 900 years removed from the Buddha. But the commentaries he wrote were not his own creation, not his originality, because The commentaries existed during the time of the Buddha. And then these commentaries were carried down from generation to generation by word of mouth. And later they were written down and then taken to Sri Lanka, and some of them were translated into Sinhalese. And then later in the 5th century, the Venerable Buddhaghosa, who was a native of India, went to Sri Lanka and worked with the monks at the great monastery in Anuradhapura, which was a stronghold of Theravada Buddhism. He got permission to write these commentaries, and so he wrote them and offered them to the Sangha there, and all were accepted as authentic exegetical literature of the text of Pali. And there is a commentary to this commentary, and we call it sub-commentary. Its name was Paramattha Manjusa, and it is mentioned in the introduction of this book. And that sub-commentary was written by a teacher or a monk called Dhammapala. I'm not sure to which age he belonged, maybe to the 7th century. And the purpose in writing this book was, as the name implies, to show people the way to purity, the way to purification. And the way to purification means the way to purification of mind, the mental impurities or defilements. So in fact, it is a book on meditation, a handbook of meditation written by a monk for monks. And when he wrote this book, he assumed a knowledge of Abhidhamma of his readers. So it is not so easy in some places to understand this book without a knowledge of Abhidhamma. So the purpose in writing this book was just to help those who wanted to practice meditation. And the different types of meditation are explained in this book, and in some cases in a meticulous detail. And when he wrote this book, he followed the structure hinted by the Buddha in one of his suttas, one of the suttas. And so the author picked one stanza from the Sutta Pitaka, from the Samyutta Nikaya, and that stanza is given at the beginning of the book. And following that stanza, and following the, let us say, the blueprint, Buddha's blueprint for spiritual development, he structured this book. Now, there are three stages in Buddha's plan for spiritual development. The first is sila, S-I-L-A, and the second is samadhi, and the third is panya. The first is, let's call virtue following this translation. The first is virtue, the second is concentration, and the third is understanding or wisdom. And sila or virtue is the foundation on which samadhi, concentration, and wisdom are built. Without the foundation of sila, there can be no concentration, and without the concentration, there can be no panya or penetration into the nature of things. So these three stages of development are to be practiced one after the other. So the other Buddhaghosa followed this. So sila or virtue is described in the first two chapters. The first one deals with sila, And the second chapter deals with what we call ascetic practices, that is, for the further purification of sila or virtue. And then from chapter 3 to chapter 13, the samadhi or concentration is explained. And in these chapters, the 40 subjects of tranquility meditation are explained in detail. And the last two chapters in this part give the benefits of the tranquility or serenity meditation. And from chapter 14 to chapter 22, that is chapter 22 is the end of the book, Panya, or wisdom or understanding, is described. And in chapters 14 to chapter 17, a theoretical knowledge of the aggregates, bases, faculties, truths, and so on are explained, and the description of practice of vipassana begins with chapter 18, going up to chapter 21. And the last chapter, chapter 22, explains the benefits of the practice of mental culture or vipassana.
We have 23 chapters.
23?
Yeah, the benefits of chapter 23. Mm-hmm. 22 is purification.
Oh, up to 22. Right. Oh. Okay, thank you. the last one is 23, chapter 23, benefits of vipassana. And there are two editions of this book in Pali in Roman or Latin script. One was published by the Polytech Society of London, and the other by Harvard University. I think you have the copy of Harvard University edition here.
Mm-hmm.
No, in Pali, I mean.
Oh, in Pali.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there are two editions of the original book in Roman script. And the edition of PTS was published in 1921. Older than all of us here, right? Oh, maybe not. I don't know. And the Harvard edition was published in 1950. And there are two English translations of this monumental work. The first one was by a Burmese layman called Pei Mountain, who was also the author of the translation of the first commentary of Abhidhamma, Attasalani. It is called Expositor. So Pei Mountain's translation came first, and it was published in 1923. And the second translation, called The Path of Purification, was done by Jnana Moli. The name was given, Bhikkhu Jnana Moli. He was an Englishman who became a Buddhist monk after the war, and he lived all his years as monk in Sri Lanka. And when he was doing this translation, I was in Sri Lanka, and when it came out in 1956, I was there. So there are two English translations, and many people think that this is a better translation. Well, I don't know. We'll have to see. Now, we are going to cover only three chapters in 8 weeks, and then maybe we'll pick up the other chapters next year. And they are altogether 120 pages, and so we'll have to do about 15 pages each week. That means you'll have to read 3 pages a day. Now, I want you to really read before you come to the class, because I think we cannot go in detail reading from the beginning to the end of this book, because we won't be able to finish 15 pages in an hour, because I'll have to explain some of the difficult points in this book. So we will do three chapters in 8 weeks. And the first chapter deals with virtue or sila. Unfortunately, it is a sila of monks. You know, this book was written for monks, and so the first chapter deals with exclusively with virtue or sila for monks. And the purification of sila is very much emphasized in this chapter, in this book. And there's a saying current in Burma that if a monk studies Visuddhimagga, and after he has studied, he would either disrobe or go into the forest and practice meditation. Because sila has to be kept very pure, and it is very difficult to keep all the precepts pure, and so some may get disillusioned or afraid of being impure and may disrobe. Or if you are a really good monk, then you will keep the silas and you will go to the forest and practice meditation.
So not all monks study it.
Actually, monks study.
All monks?
Yes. Because if you are interested in meditation, then you have to study it. Because the instructions for meditation are given in this book in detail. And everybody or every monk who wants to practice meditation has to have at least some acquaintance with this book, even though they may not have read through the book. Relying on their teachers, at least they have read some portion of the book. So this is a handbook of meditation teachers as well as students of meditation. So the first chapter deals with the virtue of monk. The author gave us a stanza from Sanyukta Nikaya, and basing on this stanza, he planned this book, and he wrote on the basis of this stanza, which describes sila, samadhi, and panya. When a wise man established well in virtue, develops consciousness and understanding, then, as a bhikkhu ardent and sagacious, he succeeds in disentangling this tangle. So this is the stanza put at the beginning of this book. And this stanza was in response to a question asked by a deity. So the deity asked Buddha, the inner tangle and the outer tangle, this generation is entangled in the tangle. And so I ask of Gautama this question, who succeeds in disentangling this tangle? And then the explanation of this stanza was given below. And when you read this book, you will have at least a glimpse of how Pali commentaries are written. There are what explanations and then some comments on it. So when you see words in italic, then this is the word which appears in the original Pali text, or here or in the original stanza. So tangle is a term for the network of craving. Actually, craving is compared to a tangle here. So when we have craving, then we are entangled in different things. So Tangle is a term for the network of craving. And the deity asked how this tangle of craving could be disentangled. And then Buddha's answer was, first, you are to be well established in virtue and sila, in moral conduct. And then you develop consciousness. Here, consciousness really means samadhi. So samadhi is described as consciousness here. And then you develop understanding of panya. Then as a bhikkhu, ardent and sagacious, he succeeds in disentangling this tangle. That means you develop samadhi, you practice samatha meditation, and then you develop understanding, that is, you practice vipassana meditation. And if you practice vipassana meditation, you will succeed in disentangling this tangle, or you will succeed in destroying this craving. And when craving is destroyed, craving is eradicated, then there will be no tangle of craving. So Buddha gave, or Buddha taught this deity to first to be well established in virtue, and then practice meditation or samadhi, and then understanding of panya or vipassana. So vipassana and panya are synonymous, and samadhi and here citta are synonymous, or samadhi and samatha are synonymous. And then the author describes how he is going to write this book. So the purification should be understood as nibbana. So purification really means nibbana, which being devoid of all stains is utterly pure. The path of purification is the path to that purification. It is the means of approach that is called the path. Now, there may be some places where I would like to make corrections or suggest a better translation. So here, paragraph 5. The path of purification is a path to that purification. It is a means of approach. I think we should see a means of attainment that is called the path. But the Pali word adhigama is used in the sense of attainment, reaching. So it is better to say a means of attainment that is called the path. The meaning is, I shall expound that path of purification. And that path of purification is taught sometimes by insight alone, that is, by vipassana alone. And according as it is said, now, always, the authors, the ancient authors, are very conscious of what we call authority. So whatever he said, he must have some proof of his authenticity. So he always referred to the statements in the text or in the Pali books, in the Pitakas. So here the author took this out of the sodas and gave as a proof of his authenticity. Formations are all impermanent. When he sees thus with understanding and turns away from what is ill, that is a path to purity. Now here vipassana is meant. So sometimes the path of purification is taught by insight or vipassana only. And in some instances, by jhana and understanding, according as it is said. Here, jhana means tranquility meditation. And understanding means vipassana meditation. So sometimes, the path is taught by jhana and by samatha and vipassana. He is near unto Nibbana, in whom are jhana and understanding. That is from Dhammapada. So here jhana means samatha meditation, and this will be described in great detail in the coming chapters. And in some instances by deeds or by karma, etc., according as it is said, by deeds, vision, and righteousness, by virtue, the sublimest life, by these are mortals purified, and not by lineage or wealth. So in this stanza, karma, and then vision, righteousness, virtue, and life sublime are described as a way to purification. So when Buddha taught people, he taught in different ways, depending on the capability of his listeners. So in some instances, by virtue, etc., according as it is said, he who is possessed of constant virtue has understanding and is concentrated. So here, virtue, understanding, and concentration is strenuous, so energy or effort, and diligent as well will cross the floods so difficult to cross. And in some instances, by the foundations of mindfulness, sometimes the path is described by foundations of mindfulness, because this path is the only way for the purification of beings and so on. And similarly, in the case of right efforts and so on, sometimes by way of right efforts, or sometimes by way of faculties and others. But in the answer to this question, it is taught by virtue and the other two. So here, in this stanza, the stanza mentioned at the beginning of the book, the path is described or taught by virtue, concentration, and wisdom. And then a detailed explanation of the stanza is given. Paragraph 7. Established well in virtue, a man wise develops consciousness and understanding and so on. Now, let's see the explanation of the word wise. Possessing the kind of understanding that is born of karma by means of a rebirth linking with triple root cause. You understand that? Understanding that is born of karma, that is the result of karma, by means of a rebirth linking with triple root cause. You are familiar with roots, right? Lobha, dosa, moha, and then opposite of these three, aloba, adosa, amoha. Now, a relinking consciousness can be accompanied by aloba and adosa, two roots, or by three roots, aloba, adosa, and amoha. When it is accompanied by three roots, a person is called a three-root person. And only these three-root persons can become enlightened in that particular life. If our relinking consciousness is accompanied by only two roots, non-attachment and non-hatred, then we cannot hope to gain enlightenment in this life. So here, develops consciousness and understanding, then a wise man means a man who is born with three roots, including understanding or wisdom, amoha.
Lobha is hatred.
Lobha is attachment. Dosa is hatred. Moha is delusion or ignorance. And then the opposite of these three are lobha, are dosa, and are moha. And only the last three roots, or two or three of the last three roots, accompany a relinking consciousness. So if you remember the diagram of relinking, death and relinking thought process, you see there is the relinking consciousness, Patisandhi. And that consciousness is accompanied by some mental factors. So among them, there may be all three good roots or two roots. So if a person is reborn with the relinking consciousness accompanied by three roots, then he is said to be wise here. And develops consciousness and understanding, develops both concentration and insight. That means practice both samatha and vipassana meditation. And on page 4, he has that, thus he is ardent. Sagacious, it is understanding that is called sagacity. I don't know what sagacious means. Possessing that is the meaning. This word shows protective understanding. Actually, here understanding means some kind of clear comprehension of what is beneficial and clear comprehension of what is suitable. So that is called understanding here. So rather than saying protective understanding, we should say understanding engaged in keeping meditation. That means when you practice meditation, you have to know which is beneficial and which is not, and which is suitable and which is not. So you have to keep this understanding or wisdom with you always when you practice meditation. And that is what is meant here. And about four lines down, we have, he sees fear, bayam ikadi, in the round of rebirth. Thus, he is a bhikkhu. Now, the word bhikkhu is translated as a monk. And as I said, most of the Buddha's suttas are taught to monks. And so you will find Buddha addressing monks. And in one of the suttas, in the suttas on the foundations of mindfulness, the commentary explains that anybody who practices meditation and who sees danger in existence can be called a bhikkhu, a monk. Because bhikkhu can be derived from bhi and ikkhu. Bhi here means fear or danger, and ikka means to see. So one who sees danger in the existence can be called a bhikkhu. So in this case, not only ordained monks, anybody who sees danger in the existence of becoming is called a bhikkhu, or can be called a bhikkhu. And such a person will be able to cut this tangle off and become an arahant. So by this stanza, Buddha shows many things, three trainings and dispensation that is good in three ways and so on. They are also all explained later. The dispensation of Buddha is said to be good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. So why is it good in the beginning? Because of the passage which says, what is the beginning of profitable things? Profitable here means wholesome, kusala. Now, different authors have different translations for Pali words. So I prefer unwholesome, but the translator here preferred maybe profitable. So profitable things means wholesome things, virtue that is quite purified. And because of the passage beginning, the not doing of any evil. Virtue is the beginning of the dispensation. So sila is the beginning of Buddha's dispensation or Buddhist religion. And that is good because it brings about the special qualities of non-remorse and so on. Now, sila is conducive to feelings of non-remorse, because when one's moral conduct is pure, one does not suffer from guilt feelings or remorse. So the benefit of a pure sila, pure virtue is non-remorse. And what I meant by, and so on. One leads to another, right? So, on page, on paragraph, in paragraph 32, we read this. About four lines down. Discipline is for the purpose of restraint. Restraint is for the purpose of non-remorse. So when we have restraint, we do not have regrets. So we are free from regrets. And non-remorse is for the purpose of gladdening. When there is non-remorse, we are glad. Gladdening is for the purpose of happiness. Gladdening is a weaker form of happiness, and happiness is a greater form of happiness. So this happiness leads to tranquility. Only when there is happiness of both. Happiness here means comfort, also means comfort. So happiness of mind and comfort of the body. So happiness leads to tranquility. And tranquility is for the purpose of bliss, sukha. So sukha is translated as bliss here. Tranquility is the pasadi. You've come across these words in the 52 Chetasikas. The tranquility of mental body, tranquility of physical body, and not physical body, tranquility of chitta. So tranquility is for the purpose of bliss, and bliss is for the purpose of concentration, and concentration is for the purpose of correct knowledge and vision, and so on. So for the purpose of concentration, we need bliss. Bliss here means comfort or peacefulness. So when there is no peacefulness, we cannot get concentration. And so it leads step by step to ultimately to liberation from all suffering and extinction of all suffering, and also extinction of the mental defilements. Then, concentration is the middle of the Buddha's dispensation. Because of the passage beginning, entering upon the profitable. Here also, the usual translation is cultivating what is wholesome or what is good. Do you remember a stanza I talked about maybe in the second or first or second bit of my lecture? There is a stanza or verse in Dhammapada which describes the in very brief way the teachings of the Buddhas, and that is not to do any evil, to cultivate what is good, and to purify one's mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. So the author here is referring to that stanza. So entering upon the profitable means cultivating what is wholesome. It is the middle of the dispensation, because it means concentration. And that is good because it brings about the special qualities of supernormal power and so on. So when you have concentration, you can get jhanas and also supernormal powers. Its goodness in the end is shown by understanding. So understanding or knowledge or wisdom is the highest stage. And so it is a goodness in the end. Because of the best, it is the purifying of one's own mind. This is the Buddha's dispensation. And because understanding is its culmination, understanding is the end of the discipline. So understanding here means penetration of four noble truths. And the paragraph 11, likewise the necessary condition for the triple clear vision is shown by virtue. Do you know the triple clear vision? They are given in the footnotes. So the sila, the necessary condition for a sila is the necessary condition for the triple clear vision. That is, recollection of past lives, knowledge of the passing away and reappearance of beings, and knowledge of destruction of mental defilements. These three are called triple clear vision. Actually, they are the supernormal knowledge. They also belong to supernormal knowledge. For with the support of perfected virtue, one arrives at the three kinds of clear vision, but nothing besides that. The necessary condition of the six kinds of direct knowledge is shown by concentration. So six kinds of direct knowledge are also given in the footnotes. And three of them are the same as the clear vision. So knowledge of supernormal power, that means to perform some miracles, the divine ear, penetration of minds, that means reading minds of others, recollection of past lives, knowledge of the passing away and reappearance of beings, and knowledge of destruction of kangas. The necessary condition for the categories of discrimination is shown by understanding. It's very difficult to understand this word. Discrimination, categories of discrimination. What do you understand by that? Actually, it is a kind of understanding. Understanding of the... let us follow the footnote first. Understanding of the meaning, understanding of the law. Law means Dhamma, his teachings. Understanding of the language, and understanding of the wisdom or intelligence. These four are called the discriminative knowledge in Pali Patisambhita. That means the penetrative knowledge of these four. And the first, meaning, meaning is only given in the footnotes, but in fact, it can mean also, also the something which arises out of something, that is, something which arises depending on some other thing. So it is the result or effect. And instead of law, we can interpret this it to mean the cause, and also the words of his teachings. And language is just language. And here, according to Theravada interpretation, it is the original language or Pali language. You know, everybody wants his language to be the original language of humanity. So, those who are brought up in the tradition of Pali thinks that Pali is the original language. So Pali was used by the people who appeared in the world in the beginning. And the people who are brought up under the Sanskrit tradition say Sanskrit is the original language of human beings. So here language means Pali language, and intelligence means just the understanding or our wisdom. So, many things are shown by just this one verse, or we are really not sure whether Buddha meant all these, but the commentators are very fond of explaining in many ways a single teaching or a single verse of the Buddha. Now, in paragraph 12, likewise, the means for surmounting the states of loss. Now, the states of loss means the states of woe, the state of misery, the four apayas, the animal kingdom, hell, angry ghosts, and another kind of ghosts. The means for surmounting the element of sense desires by concentration. Do you know the element of sense desires? What do you understand by that?
Right?
No. Element of sense desires here means the world of sense desires, kama, vajra, loka. The word used is, the Pali word used here is dhatu. And dhatu is normally translated as element. So he translated it as element of sense desires. But it doesn't convey the intended meaning. So in Pali we have the word kama dhatu, rupa dhatu, and arupa dhatu. Kama dhatu means just the realms of sense desire, that is, human world and six lower celestial worlds and the four states of war. They are called kama dhatu. So here, I think instead of the element, we should say the worlds of sense desires. That makes more sense.
So, Rana, for those of you people don't have books, I sort of would like to read the question and the answer again so they get the connection. Is that okay?
Good. Yes.
Okay. So the question that the commentary is answering is, the inner tangle and the outer tangle, this generation is entangled in a tangle. And so I ask of Gotama this question, who succeeds in disentangling this tangle? And then the answer to that is what we've been discussing little bits of, which is, when a wise